Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now our Iceman Insight segment, starring senior writer, webmaster, vice president of off-ice shenanigans, Michael Shockley. After Thanksgiving, we both survived the weekend. How you doing, Mike?
I'm very glad that Thanksgiving only comes around once a year, because if it came around more often, I would be in a perpetual tryptophan hangover and about 200 pounds heavier.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. There's always that moment where I say to myself, usually it's Wednesday, I'm not going to overeat this time. I'm going to take it easy. Oh, rah, 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 yeah. And I just inhale everything nonstop.
Yeah, well, part of the problem is it seems like Thanksgiving is the holiday of making way too much food for the people that are present. Because we went to the in-laws on Thursday, and my mother-in-law is one of those people who, if there are six people coming, she will cook for about 15.
That's what I do as well.
So I end up eating for two or three and then take leftovers for two or three more. And because I feel bad, I don't want to leave that much food behind. So, you know, I don't want it to go to waste. I mean, there are hungry children in Rwanda that would love to have turkey.
Yeah.
And rather than have it go to waste, I'd rather just put it in my belly.
Take care of it for the team. Speaking of taking it for the team, 1-2 on the road trip. They still got two more games to play on the road, and not too bad. But boy, that Wednesday night game was—I was listening on the radio. It was nasty. I think at the 11-minute mark, we were outshot 11-1, and there was one stoppage of play in that time.
Yeah, it. Well, I think the three games since we last spoke was kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly, but backwards. Starting with the ugly on Wednesday in Wheeling, you know, you lose 4-0, you get outshot 33-18. It's just ugly any way you look at it. But you also have to consider that was kind of a getting to know you game with all the guys that had been brought in at the last minute, basically to fill in for players that are out with injuries. There was a lot of unfamiliarity among teammates there, and you got to expect that it's going to take a game or two to sort of get everyone on the same page and get rolling in the same direction. And you started to see that on Friday in Trenton. They lost 3-2, but they took a 2-0 lead, and it was a better performance. So,
how about that Trent Vogel-Huber?
Yeah,
that kid is fantastic.
He's good. It's unfortunate that he got hurt Friday, but hopefully he's not going to miss too much time, because he's a good, good player.
It amazes me still that he's a plus. He is, yeah, a plus on the season on a team where, you know, you look at Robinson with the minus 17, Bolio and Gender at minus 7, and the whole team, I think Matt Jens is minus 8, and then here's Trent Vogel-Huber, who just has an awesome name to begin with.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's plus 2, plus 3 all season long.
Yeah, that's particularly impressive when you just look not only at how many other players are well into the minus, but also just as a team. I think the team's goal differential is already minus 20, which is really, really bad for this early in the season. But that's what happens when you get all these call-ups and all these injuries, which we'll get into more later. But yeah, the road trip didn't start out well in Wheeling. It got a little better in Trenton on Friday. But then the coup de grace was Saturday in Reading when the Icemen, a team with all of 13 skaters, go into Reading on the road and beat a team that had won 11 games in a row. And it's just one of those games that the old adage in football is any given Sunday, and that's the case in hockey too. If you take a team lightly, or if you don't show up and bring your A game, you can lose on any given night, no matter how bad supposedly the opponent is. And the Icemen proved that. Reading, I don't know if they were just assuming that they could win that game or what, but the Icemen went in and beat them 4-2.
I remember, I think Todd Robinson, there's an interview with him, a written interview, on the Iceman website, and it's pretty interesting. And he talks about sometimes the difficulties of playing at home because you want to make the pretty pass. You want to put on the show for the home fans. And Redding came in here last Sunday. I mean, what a difference between 6 days. Redding comes in here last Sunday, and we've got bus legs. We're exhausted. They shut us down. They tear us up, 7-2 victory. And then 6 days later, half those guys that played are injured at this point. We go into their barn, and we're able to beat them. So, and that also just talks about the professionalism and pride that this team, just because a team loses doesn't mean they don't have professionalism. It doesn't mean that they're not trying. It just means you get beat, and you see it 6 days later undermanned, and they get a huge victory.
Yeah, well, and I think it's proof that even the worst teams in any given league, there's not that much a separation from the bad to the good. And if you take a couple guys out, or if you have the better team supposedly that just has a bad night, it's anyone can win any game in this league. And the Iceman proved it Saturday. That was actually their fourth straight win on Saturdays.
Can we just play the rest of them on Saturday?
Apparently we need
with
to.
Matt Spaeth as a linesman.
Yeah, so I guess get your tickets now for this Saturday's yes. home game, because that's
Star Wars gonna night and guaranteed victory.
Guaranteed by the Dirty D.
Yes, I will take that guarantee.
And if they don't win, what happens?
Then I throw you under the bus for a bad statistic.
Oh, okay. I see.
I'm going off the statistic
it's
here.
It's all my fault. I see. Well,
it's all your fault if they lose. Oh, it's all my glory if they win. Yep.
Gotcha. I didn't realize we were married.
Oh, yes. Yes, we are.
So, anyway, yeah, the game Saturday in Reading, Carlo Fanucci, one of the new acquisitions, scored his first pro goal just 28 seconds into the game, sets the tone. Dan Gander finally unearthed his skills and scored a couple goals, including a power play goal, and then Jason Dale had an empty netter late to ice the game. And that's it's really impressive when you consider that Reading had won 11 in a row, which was a new club record and the longest winning streak in the league this year. The Icemen were down to 13 skaters, and out of those 13, four of them had been with the team for less than a week. So it's just one of those bizarro kind of games, but teams have a tendency, because players are human, they're not robots, you have a tendency to play up to good competition and down to bad competition. And we saw it last year with the Icemen. They did that all the time. They'd go up to Fort Wayne and beat the Comets in their own barn with 9,000 people. Then they'd turn around and lose at home to Bloomington or Dayton.
Yeah, and it was frustrating.
Yeah, and it just you just want to throw your hands up and scream, but that's just the nature of it. You know, guys, these are not robots. These are human beings, and they're not going to be on their A game every night, and they know emotionally that they need to get up for certain games to compete, and by extension then there are going to be some games that they may not feel like they need to get up for that they don't. And apparently that's what happened with Reading on Saturday, and the Icemen were the beneficiaries. But it also helps that as the season goes on, because the Icemen are now established as one of the cellar dwellers in the league so far, and then you look at all the call-ups and injuries, they become a prime target for seeing backup goalies. And I looked it up, and out of the six wins that the Icemen have so far, only one of them came against a team's number one goalie. There were a couple where there's kind of a 1A and 1B, but you look at it and you see, even though there's a timeshare, the guy that has the better stats is not who we saw. So out of six games that we've won, five of them came against the weaker of the goalies that were at the opposition's disposal. So I think we may see that more going forward, that we'll see backup goalies and that can be the difference in losing a one-goal game versus winning a one-goal game. So you may pick up some wins that you perhaps otherwise would not, just because teams are going to be trotting out their backup against you because you're toward the bottom of the standings.
That is an amazing point. That was always that's Toronto Maple Leaf hockey at its finest right there. We'd start getting on a win streak and Leaf Nation would start getting exciting and be like, well, hold on, we've played the backup goalie for three games in a row. So, and most time we've talked about how Crom likes to just rotate his goalies up until the playoffs, but a lot of coaches, they have their guy that they go to, and then the backup's role is to give the number one a rest,
right?
And so you target, you know, you got a a battle for, you know, first place or something like that, you're going to go with your man, and then you got Evansville coming into town the next week or the next day, and then that's who your backup's going to see.
Yeah, and that's more usual in the pro ranks. You don't see a whole lot of goalie rotations because a lot of coaches prefer to have the clear number one and the clear number two. But Crom doesn't necessarily have that luxury yet because neither guy has really stood out as, this is my job, you can't go away from me. You see flashes from both guys, but then they'll turn around and lay an egg the next game. So until someone really steps up and seizes the number one job, we will probably continue to see that rotation. But that's not really that common in the pro ranks. Most teams will have, yeah, the one guy that's going to get two-thirds of the starts, more or less, and the other guy will start the games against the weaker opponents and one of the three when you play three games in 3 days and things like that. But as long as the Icemen are toward the bottom of the standings, we'll probably continue to see backups, which will help us maybe win a few games that perhaps we shouldn't.
Well, and I'm interested to know, too, has Crom gotten, in 3 years now as his coach, the goalie that he wants? You know, the closest I can think is bringing in P.O. Pelletier last year, second-round draft pick of Phoenix. The guy was he's got fantastic skills. You can't take that away from him. And I wonder if that was going to be the guy that Crom was going to say, this is going to be my guy for the rest of his career until he gets called up back into the AHL, and he was just horrible. He was just a heartless French Canadian.
I think it's all the hairspray. It got to his brain,
yeah,
and it screwed things up. I know P.O. is a very popular player with some of the fans on Facebook, and
you can say women.
Some of the fans on Facebook really liked P.O. But there, like you said, there's no doubting the fact that he has skills. You don't get drafted by an NHL team if you don't have skills.
No, he's big. He's athletic. I mean, you see that every time he
right.
went out there.
But the inconsistency, which is more mental than physical, is what drives you nuts about him, that he would go out there and post a shutout or give up one goal and look great, and then the next game he goes out there and it looks like his head's in the clouds, which I guess hairspray clouds can linger. That's what's keeping him in the minors, because with that kind of size and talent, if you bring it consistently on a nightly basis, then you're going to be up in the show, or at the very least in the AHL. You're not going to be toiling down in AA and trying to save the remnants of your career. So I think probably up until this season, he probably is the most talented goalie that we've seen. I think Brian Gillis was solid, but he's got some things that he still needs to work on if he wants to move up to the next level. He had the mental side of it, I think, more.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
But I don't know that he had necessarily the same skills that P.O. had. But I think if either one of those is going to move up to the next level, Gillis is probably the more likely to do it, but he's just not ready yet. Last year was his rookie season, and in goalies you need a few years to really adjust to the pro game and find your game. But I think both guys that we have this year are really solid. They have the skills, they have the talent. You see it in flashes. It's just a matter of, again, they're both rookies. And it's going to take time for them to establish that consistency and be the guy they need to be night in, night out. And the question is, how long will they be here long term? You know, will we get to see them show their skills and grow into who they have the potential to be? And I think Paul Karpovich, we might, because if we keep the Blues affiliation, he may stick around here for another year or two.
They've got a major goaltending backlog through all levels above us.
Right. So we could very well see him for a couple of years if that affiliation continues. I don't think Rod Medor is going to be here for long. That's just a loaner basically from the Charlotte Checkers in the AHL. And I frankly will be kind of surprised if he's here even all of the season, let alone beyond this season. But we'll enjoy him while he lasts. But the other question going forward will be, what happens when the goaltending situation with Columbus and Springfield gets ironed out as far as guys getting healthy? Right now, Springfield has two guys in Springfield. They have another guy that they've assigned to the CHL because we didn't have room for him with Medor. And then they've got another guy who's currently injured, Alan York, who's a guy that's played NHL games. So when York gets healthy, do we see him? Do we see someone else get sent down and York stays in Springfield? But also, then, what happens to Medor? Because if there comes a point where Columbus has four guys and they need somewhere to put him, will they assign him to somewhere else? Or will they assign him here and say, Crom, do what you need to do to get rid of one guy and make room for him? And I don't know exactly how the ins and outs of that work with the fact that they are our affiliate, and Crom may just have to send Madore back to Charlotte and say, sorry, we don't have room for him anymore.
And let me clarify, I have nothing against the goalies this year at all. I've seen Madore most of the time in action, in me being live at the game, and I've really liked what I've seen. I've liked Karpovich as well. I'm just curious to know, you know, if Crom does get his goalie, if it's Karpovich next year after this season, and he says, this is my man,
right,
is he going to play 55 games, or will he always use this system?
I think if he gets a guy that he's really confident in, I think he'll probably ride him more than a 50-50 split. I don't know that we're ever going to see a guy that's going to play 55-60 games, but I think you might have more of a 40-30 kind of split where it just leans a little more in one direction than the other. I think there's so much of a premium on keeping guys fresh at this level because there's so many 3-3s and 4-5s and back-to-backs. And as much as you would like to just ride the hot goalie as long as you can, when you're playing three games in 3 days on back-to-back weekends, you just can't. You have to vary it up because...
Yeah, with a 7-hour bus trip in between
right,
each game.
Yeah, so there's just... Logistically, it just doesn't work. The schedule isn't spread out the same way it is in the NHL. You'll see NHL teams will play their starter 60, 65 out of 80 games, which is a crazy workload, but they can do it a little more because it's spread out. They don't play 3-3s hardly at all in the NHL.
And chartered air flight.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah, it helps when you're riding first class on a 4-hour flight instead of driving 8 hours on a bus. So... It'll be interesting to see how the goalie situation plays itself out over time, but I think in the meantime we just need to enjoy the ride and see Karpovich and Madore develop into legitimate professional goalies. I think they both have the talent to do so.
You are listening to Iceman Insight here on 96.9 The Wire, and Michael Shockley joins us because he's just that good, and he makes me look really good, and part of... just proof, this week's proof of that is, I don't know if he's got a computer set up that's calculating this in a constant, continual way, but you've got man games tracked through the season so far, and you've got to have like one of those big 1960s IBM full room computers if you're going to keep up with that this year.
Yeah, the old abacus doesn't do it anymore.
No.
There's... it's actually, I only started, I went had to go back about a week ago and tally it up to that point because of all the injuries that have hit. And I wanted to start keeping a log as games have gone on. So for the last week, what I did is just went back and figured out how many guys missed the last three games and added to the previous total. But currently, 19 games into the season, we are now up to 72 man games lost due to injury. We've also had, and this is a staggering stat considering that we're only 19 games in the season, even though you can only dress 18 players per game, we've already had 32 different players suit up for the Icemen for at least one game this season. And that number's only going to grow. We've got another guy that we'll get to in a minute that came in that's going to make that 33. And I'm sure that's just going to continue to get bigger as the weeks go on. But we currently have 10 players, 6 defensemen and 4 forwards out. And only 7 of the 16 skaters who were on the opening day active roster are still healthy and in Evansville and able to play. So, yeah, we've got Mark Cody shifted to the 21-day IR. Apparently his shoulder injury is bad enough that they expect him to miss a fairly decent amount of time. And then on Friday, as we mentioned in Trenton, Trent Vogelhuber apparently hurt his shoulder. We haven't been told yet how bad that is, but it was bad enough to keep him out Saturday. I'm sure there will be some discussions and testing and whatnot going on to see how long he's going to be out, and perhaps Mr. Patafi will be able to add to that later.
Yes.
But thankfully, that's the only new injury that we sustained over the weekend that we know of, so perhaps the tide is going back down to where we're not getting this ridiculous flow of guys getting hurt on a game-by-game basis. But also Saturday, Patrick Kennedy missed that game because he was suspended. On Friday in Trenton, he got a major for boarding.
Yes, I saw that on the stats.
Yeah, so he was out on Saturday, and he's going to – I think they have to review it.
Ooh, it was that serious.
Yeah,
huh?
I would hope that he'll be back immediately, but remains to be seen. We thought the last time when Gender took his penalty up in Fort Wayne, we thought he would be back immediately, and he ended up getting a couple more games. So
I didn't think he'd be back immediately.
Oh, really?
Yeah, elbow to the head with the head thing that – they it says right there in the ECHL rule book that they follow the head protocol set forth by the NHL. So anything that targets the head, a high stick, an elbow, or anything like that, you're going to see suspension come down, a la Shanna Ban, the Shanna Hammer.
So yeah, I didn't see the hit. There were some posts on Facebook that people thought that it wasn't really a legitimate major, but that's up to the league to decide.
Was there a non-Iceman that thought it was a non-Iceman fan that thought it was a non-legitimate major?
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone's a referee. But the good news is we're finally going to get a player back. Jesse Perrin is supposed to come off the IR for tonight's game at Cincinnati, so we'll finally get a little bit of a reinforcement of one guy coming off the IR, and I believe that'll drop our number of injured players back to 9, so at least we'll be back in single digits.
And I think he has been skating a little bit, so he should be able to, if he does get cleared for the game tonight, should take right off. I mean, it's still gameplay and checking and everything else, but it's not like he hasn't done anything for 21 days
right,
and is just suiting up.
Yeah, it may take a game or two to kind of get back into the flow and knock off a little rust, but in general, he should be. It's not like he'll be a liability out there just because he's coming right off. So hopefully that'll help stabilize the blue line a little bit, but he's not the only new addition to the lineup. The transaction's been flying over the last week. Before the big Thanksgiving road trip began, the Iceman signed 3 guys. Center Carlo Fanucci, he was from the Reading Royals for future considerations. He's a rookie. He actually played college at Alaska Fairbanks with Aaron Jens.
Oh.
And then they signed
connection there. Cool.
Yeah. They signed a pair of defensemen. Sean Whitney was acquired from the San Francisco Bulls for future considerations. He's also a rookie. He played college at Cornell with Patrick Kennedy. And also, his older brother, Ryan Whitney, is an NHL defenseman, a pretty solid NHL defenseman.
Yep, for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah. He's, I don't know if he's still there or not.
Oh, wait, did he get traded?
I think
traded
he's in Edmonton now.
Edmonton, yeah, he got traded.
But yeah, he's been around the block. He's a solid player. I know people that play fantasy hockey probably know him because he's a relevant defenseman in the world of fantasy hockey. So it's not like he's some scrub who just plays the third pairing and sits on the bench a lot of times. He's a solid player.
Are you talking about me in the men's league?
Well, there's nothing. Never, ever should you and fantasy be said in the same sentence.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, the other defenseman they signed was a free agent from the Quad City Mallards from the CHL, Jared Lavender. He's the guy that Patafi was talking about that had played in Missouri. He also, before he was in Quad City, played for the Missouri Mavericks. And another connection to the Iceman, when he was in Missouri, he played with Jeff Christian. So, and by the way, best wishes to the Christian family. I know they're dealing with Ryan. Their daughter has been given a pretty grim prognosis in her ongoing battle with cancer. So I know a lot of fans on Facebook have been posting about that and sending their well wishes, and it's a tough time. They just had a new baby not too long ago, but it's certainly not like there's a replacement. That's it's really sad, but hopefully they can get through this and live on the happy memories. But anyway, back to the stuff that won't bring the room down.
Yeah.
We'll just talk about all the injuries the Icemen have. Then while they were on the road trip on Saturday, the Icemen sent future considerations to the Trenton Titans for right wing Jim McKenzie. He did not play on Saturday for either team, so it's not like he played the game and then was told to change
his
jersey and get on the bus. but it is kind of odd when you're in town to play a team and then on the same day you acquire a player who's rostered on that team. But this is his 6th pro season. He's actually a veteran. He's not a bad guy to acquire either. He's bounced around the AHL and the ECHL. He's got 67 games in the A and 157 in the E over 4 years. Last year, he played in the CHL with the Allen Americans. and put up some pretty good numbers. He played 54 games and had 44 points and 168 penalty minutes. So
that's an Iceman fan kind of guy,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah, the gritty grinder, put up some points and rack up a lot of penalty minutes. So
now, is this because Todd Robinson is injured that opens up that veteran spot so that we can replace him with a veteran?
Actually, right now it's because Plante. Todd has not been put on the IR yet, and guys that are on the reserve list still count toward the active roster and the veteran limit. Guys on the 21-day IR do not. So because Plante has been put on the IR, that allows us to sign another veteran. Now, if they decide to put Todd on the IR, they could also sign yet another veteran short-term until he comes back. But I doubt they will because Todd's not necessarily expected to miss a ton of time. I think with Plante, it's looked at as a little bit longer-term kind of deal. So they probably felt it was necessary to bring in another guy who's got a little more experience. But McKenzie very well might be a guy that could be worth keeping around beyond when we get over all these injuries. So it'll be interesting to see him in person. I've never seen the guy play that I know of.
Trying to think. That name sounds familiar. I'm going to have to do a little research on that.
There's been a lot of McKenzies in the NHL.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's related to any of them or not, but... Plus, he's been around the block. You know, like I said, he's played in the A and the E, and he played in the CHL last year with Allen, but they never came here, so we never saw him play in Evansville.
Live.
But
do you know who drafted him? Is he a drafted player? We'll look it up.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think he was. I looked him up on HockeyDB, and usually it says whether or not they were drafted, and I don't recall seeing that he was drafted on there. So I think it's just a guy that's a minor leaguer that's kind of bounced around and who knows where he'll end up settling, but maybe it'll be here.
That'd be cool.
You never know. And then the last transaction, for now, as of the time of this recording, is Monday. We actually got a bit of a reinforcement from the Peoria-St. Louis affiliation. The Blues and Rivermen sent down a winger by the name of Stéphane Delarovère.
I like it.
He's not going to be here long. It's just going to be a rehab stint. He had knee surgery in the offseason and hasn't played any this year, but the early indication is he may only be here two games, which would be the two road games at Cincy, so we may not even see him on home ice, but I would imagine at most we'll see him for the next four games, so even if we do see him at home, it'll probably just be for the two games this weekend, and then he'll probably get called up. But if he stays healthy and gets called up, perhaps they will then be able to send someone else down. But this is his third pro year. He's played two full seasons in the AHL with Peoria. 26 points, 226 penalty minutes. He also had a cup of coffee with the Blues in the show. So he played seven games with the Blues. He actually was a seventh-round pick of the Washington Capitals in 2008, and then he was traded to the Blues in July of 2010, and he's been with the Blues ever since. He actually has a gold medal, too. He represented Canada in the 2009 and 2010 World Junior Championship Tournament, and he won a gold in 2009 and a silver in 2010. So that's pretty cool. I think that might be the first gold medalist of any kind that we've ever had.
I hope he stays till Saturday.
I would like to see him.
To play World Junior for the World Junior team for Canada, that is, you get 22 kids that go, and, I mean, it is... I mean, it's bigger than our presidential election to pick this team
huge.
Every year. It's how important it is, and kids' careers and lives are destroyed because they don't make this team, and then the hockey-crazy media up in Canada just lambaste them and everything else and blah, 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 blah. But for him to actually make that team, he has got to be a fantastic player, and I want to see him live.
And the junior hockey scene of Canada is so big. I mean, it's 10 times bigger than minor league hockey in America. And like you said, you can make or break a career based on playing in the World Juniors. If you've got a player who is considered a blue chip prospect and a shoe-in for the junior team in Canada, and then something happens and he doesn't make the team, he can be immediately labeled a bust and his career can go down the toilet.
Yeah,
but in the same way, if you have a guy that's maybe considered a fringe guy who makes the team and shines, then all of a sudden he's on everyone's radar.
Yeah, and it's the difference between being a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick.
Yeah.
You shine at the World Juniors, you're probably going in the first round somewhere. You are supposed to shine at the World Juniors, and you don't. You know, everyone will talk about, you know, he's slipping in the draft because of a poor World Junior showing against good competition.
Right, right. And that's a big feather in his cap, not only to have played in it, but to have won a gold and a silver. So
that actually means more to me than the 7 games he played with the Blues. Actually see, you know, a Canadian junior world champion come into town.
Yeah, because, you know, you can get called up and play 7 games in the NHL as a regular AHL guy who, you know, if they just have injuries and need a quick replacement for a few games. And even if you get called up and play 7 games, you're probably going to be a fourth liner who gets, what,
two, three
shifts a period, and that's it. So, the juniors on his resume, that was the most impressive thing that stood out to me. Interesting fact, I looked up Della Rovere. You would perhaps think that because he's Canadian, that would be French, but it's not. It's actually Italian. And Della Rovere is Italian for of the oak.
Ooh.
So his name literally translates to Stephen of the Oak.
Didn't we have, what was the Vare kid, the Greenwood kid that we had a couple of years ago?
Oh, yeah, there was I can't think of his name. There was a kid that had a weird story behind their name. You get some interesting names, too, in hockey. There's some Native Americans and some Inuit people that you have these odd names, like Colton Yellowhorn and Robin Big Snake and some of these great names. Robin Big Snake, that's your is that your adult movie name?
Oh,
or is
no.
it Derek Big Snake, your district cousin?
It would probably be Robin Garter Snake. But anyways, as we digress here horribly, speaking...
Are we still on?
Yes, we are still on. Oh, we are now to that segment, the best segment of Iceman
Insight.
You can
hear the excitement in his voice.
Yes, because we actually stopped talking for 3 minutes. Shockers, hockey, rocks, song of the week.
Shockers, hockey, rock, song of the week. This week, because the Icemen have had so many injuries, I thought it was appropriate to play this. This is a song that I used to play at Swander after there was an injury on the ice. If a player was down and then got up and skated to the bench, or if as long as he skated more or less under his own power, whether it be to the bench or the locker room, I would play this song after he was up, which... Not to digress, because that's what we do, but a pet peeve of mine is when you're watching hockey and you'll hear there will be a guy down on the ice hurt and the music guy will start playing music while he's down on the ice still. I've always thought that's very disrespectful, and thankfully the Iceman, the new guy for the Iceman, has not done that. Anytime a player's been down hurt, he keeps it quiet too, but that always bugs me if you're watching an NHL game or if you're at a minor league game somewhere and someone's hurt down on the ice being tended to and they're just playing some random music song that... That's a pet peeve of mine. But anyway, whenever the players at Swander would get up after recovering from their injury enough to skate off, I would play this song. It's from the king of the soundtrack, Kenny Loggins.
Yes.
This is from 1980, from the Caddyshack soundtrack. Kenny Loggins, I'm All Right.
Yeah.
And we're back on Iceman Insight with Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster of IcemanManiacs.com, your one and only source for hockey information, Iceman hockey information in the tri-state area. And what are we talking about next? Oh, you wanted to talk about captains.
Yeah, I thought there was a lot of speculation last week after Todd Robinson and Phil Plante both went out of what would happen with the situation with the captains, and who would take over the C, and or would they even appoint a new C? Would they just perhaps keep three A's as teams sometimes do when their captain is out? And while I didn't see the game, so I don't know if they really did appoint a C in league stat at least over the weekend. The captains were Matt Jens took over as the C, which didn't surprise me because of the three original captains. He was the only one left. And then the two alternate captains were Daniel Tatro and Josh Beaulieu, which I thought that was a fine. I knew Tatro would be one of them because he took over the first time Plonk got hurt. The question was, who would the second A be? And there was a lot of discussion on Facebook about, would it be Beaulieu? Would it be Dale Mahovsky? A few other names were thrown around. I know a couple of people even suggested Trent Vogelhuber because of the way he plays, and he's always playing 110% and digging in the corners and setting a good example. But I knew Vogelhuber would not be, because at this level, you're not going to see a rookie be a captain. You're not going to see a new acquisition, a player that we just acquired in a trade. So like a Jim McKenzie, even though he's got a lot of experience under his belt, he's not going to be a captain because he just came to the team. And you're also not going to see guys that are property of our affiliates, because you don't want to appoint someone a captain and count on him to be part of your leadership group and then have him get called up.
Yeah.
So, you know, there may be rare occasions where that will happen, but in general, they're not going to be, no matter how much experience they may have, if they're property of one of your upper level affiliates, they're probably not going to be one of your captains. So if you rule those out, the only other options besides Beaulieu for the second A were Mahovsky, Jason Dale, Dan Gender, Tyler Shelast, and Patrick Kennedy. And I figured probably the other guy that was probably under the most consideration was Mahovsky, partly because he's been in every game. Dale maybe too. But you knew it wouldn't be Gender because he's been benched. And
yeah.
Generally, if you're a guy that's been benched, you're not going to be one of the captains. And Shelast has been benched a few games, too. Kennedy, I think, would have maybe been a decent choice, too.
But he's gotten one call-up already, hasn't he?
Not this season.
Okay.
But and he does have experience in the ECHL. He played for Idaho last year.
Okay.
So I thought he maybe would have been a decent choice, too. But I think all of the things being equal, Beaulieu got the nod probably because he's been around. He's more familiar with Crom, whereas all the other guys are new this season. So I thought that was probably the most logical choice. Now, granted, I'm not privy to everything that happens behind the scenes, and people need to understand that captains aren't just about who your leader is on the ice. There's a lot of stuff that happens in the locker room and on off days, and dealing with the owner, dealing with the coach, that the captains are a liaison between the entire roster and the coach and management and owners and whatnot. So it's not just a case of guys who are, you know, who's your leading scorer. He's got to be your captain. So I don't know all the little details that happened, but I think based on what we know, Beaulieu was probably a good choice. And I'm not surprised that Matt Jens was named the captain in Todd's absence either, because even though Tétro and well, I think Tétro is probably the only one now that has more experience.
Yeah.
But I wasn't surprised one bit that Jens took over as the C, partly because he was the only of the original three that was still left. But maybe talk a little bit about just the role of a captain and that there's perhaps more than meets the eye there.
I know when I've coached and we've named captains at the high school level here in Evansville, the one thing, a couple of things that factor in, you want someone who plays hockey the way you want it played. You want, you know, the embodiment of you. You're stuck behind the bench. Other than barking at a ref every once in a while, you have no effect on the game. So you want players out there that are your leaders that play the game how you want the rest of the team to play it. So that's a big factor there. There's also guys that you kind of groom over the years. That I had a great defenseman, Pat Hansen, who was on the team as a defenseman as a freshman, and he worked on his game and he worked on things. He always had that raw ability, but he needed to work on the rest of the leadership stuff. And his senior year, he was made our captain of Wrights High School because he was able to make that change. So there's always guys, too, that, you know, you think he's got the ability. We just need to polish up those edges a little bit. The other thing is, as a coach, you set the game plan, you set the practice schedule, and then you walk away. And the players have to do it. You know, whether you're going to your locker room or heading out to the ice before a game, the coach comes out first. You're not with those players. Even at the lower levels of youth hockey, you're not around those kids all the time. And so when you walk out that door, you want to have leaders that understand what you're teaching, that can help teach it, and are going to back you up in what you want to do. So when you walk out that door, you don't want, you know, three guys saying, geez, that guy doesn't know what the heck he's talking about, and they're goofing around and everything else, and they're not focused on the game. You want the same tone that you set in your pregame speech, you want carried out through that team before they get out onto the ice. And to find two or three guys that you trust in the most, it's not as easy as it sounds. And you have a Todd Robinson. Again, we go back to this whole take the C away from Todd Robinson before he was injured. This is the craziest thing I've ever heard. When you've got a guy that you trust, that you've won battles with, that you've gone into the fire with, and he always does what you want him to do, how can you not put the C? That's the guy you're going to trust through the rest of his career. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I think there's been a lot of talk about, well, why don't we have an assistant coach? Well, people need to understand that at this level, your captains more or less are assistant coaches on the ice and in the locker room. And when the coach is perhaps not getting through to the team the right way, you know, if something's just not working and things are off kilter, the captains then are the ones that have to step up and either talk to the coach and figure something out that will change the fortunes, or more or less just take over. Not that the inmates are running the asylum, but you hear about player-only meetings a lot of times, especially in football. If a team's struggling, you'll hear, well, the players call it a players-only meeting. Well, you know who calls that? The captains. And it's basically a case of, listen, what we're doing is not working. Something's wrong. Coach, it's not like coach forgot how to coach. So it's about us. We have to figure out what we're doing wrong, and we have to do it better. Because you're not going to always have an assistant coach at this level. And especially with a team that's struggling, you need veteran leadership and guys that are wearing the C and the A's that can step up in bad times. It's easy to be a captain when you're winning. It's easy to be a fan when you're winning. But when you're losing, when the ship is sinking, the captains are the guys that need to be the first ones that are trying to bail water out of the boat. And if you've got a guy
and the ones that are motivating everyone else to start bailing,
right,
too.
Right. If you've got a captain who is the first guy to jump overboard, then you really got a problem. But and that's what makes it so difficult. You have to sometimes, like this season, you've got a team that had almost all new players, and that makes it even more important to have guys that are your leadership group that you can trust. And I think people sometimes take the C and the A lightly, that they're not as important as they are, that they're just, oh, well, you know, if there's a questionable call, you go over and talk to the ref, and that's all there is to being a captain. That couldn't be farther from the truth. There's so much stuff that happens off the ice, in the locker room, on off days even, when the coach is not around, when you're not at the rink, that the captains have to do, and that's why those decisions are really important, more so than probably the average fan could ever fathom.
One thing that really interests me, just a little bit off this topic, is how well Crom has developed people, developed younger players, rookie players, in the 3 years that we've seen them. You know, Brian Bicek was not a 30-goal scorer for Muskegon. He was a third-line rookie, I believe, and to see, you know, what he became in his two seasons with the Icemen. And then you look at Josh Beaulieu, who we made that trade for him last year. He was a penalty kill specialist that could put the puck in the net. He's a first-line left winger, and now Robinson's gone, and he's still scoring goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is how good he's become. And then Matt Jens, he came in last year. No one knew who he was. He started dropping those hip check bombs and blowing people up, and he became a fan favorite. And now he's the captain of this hockey club, and
an all star. He was an all star last year.
And so, you know, again, the Fire Crom crowd has to look at, you know, these guys just don't develop. You just don't skate, and then all of a sudden you become a 30 goal scoring Brian Bicek. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of training and practice that goes into creating a player like that. Josh Beaulieu has become an all around player. He's my surprise player of this year, and same with Matt Jens. Matt Jens has taken on leadership as well as playing defense or right wing on the first line, as the case may be, and all of that goes back to Crom. And then and of course Crom, you know, is going to reward that slash. That's what he wants the rest of the team to look at. How do I succeed with Rich Crom? Well, I do things like Matt does it. I do things like Josh Beaulieu does it, because that is who he's giving credit to. That is who he's relying on, because he puts those letters on their chest.
Yeah, and I think Jens playing wing when the team needed him to was huge, because you could very well go to a guy and say, hey, you know, we're a little short up front. We need somebody to play up. And some guys would just say, no, I haven't played wing since high school. I'm not doing it. I would feel bad doing it because I might screw up. And I'm sure that Matt Jens thought that. You know, maybe I'll go up there and I'll screw up and I'll miss an assignment, or I'll be out of position because I haven't played this, and we'll get scored on, and it'll be my fault. But if you're a leader of the team, you take that risk. You do what is necessary for the team, and if you put yourself in individual peril as a result, so be it. It's all about what's best for the team. And I think Jens played well when he was playing forward briefly, and I think that went a long way toward Crom trusting him perhaps even more than he already had, and that could be part of why he was given the C with Todd out. And there's a lot of talk online about, well, Jens, he takes bad penalties, and he does this, and he does that, and nobody in this level is perfect. Every guy has his drawbacks. But I think there's enough there on the ice that you can overlook some of that and understand what happens off the ice trumps that, and that's why he's the captain right now.
The lockout, it's not looking good. My brother sent me an email yesterday. I was traveling back from Michigan, so he was trying to keep me entertained. Sent me an email that federal negotiators are now stepping in to help the owners and the Players Association, which to me just says they're going to meet with these federal guys and then the federal arbitrators, and then both sides will say, the federal government has proved that they won't negotiate. So it's just more media ploy. But I think for the most part, I'm pretty sure this season's done. As soon as they canceled the Winter Classic, that's the only thing left that is of any value on the calendar now is the draft in end of June, first part of July.
Yeah, I think they've canceled all the games through December 14th, over 400 total games. The Winter Classic's lost. The All-Star game's lost. At this point, could you, if you struck a deal today, you may squeeze in, what, a 48 to 54 game season, playing a lot of back-to-backs.
Like they did back in 93 or 94, right. Whenever that one was.
But if you do that, the season's going to have an asterisk firmly attached to it because it was a limited season, and there would be talk of, well, the Stanley Cup champion, it wasn't, you know, a legitimate championship because it wasn't a full season. And I think they're just so far apart still. I just don't see it happening. As much as I would love to see them get together and really sort it out, because there's been too many times when you hear they're going 2-3 weeks without talking, and it's like, well, how are you ever going to come to an agreement if you're not even talking? But the reason why they're not talking is because they're so far apart
there's
on the major fundamentals, right? Unless one side decides to give in, it's just not going to happen. So I think I agree. I think it's – I don't say that it's not going to happen, that they could save it, but at this point, if I had to put money on one way or the other, I'd say the season's not going to happen at all.
Which is good news for the Alaska Aces to win the championship, yeah. Because they right now have Brandon Dubinsky, Scott Gomez, and there's another NHL player playing for them.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. They got three pros up.
And there are several teams that have – there aren't a whole lot of NHL guys playing at this level, but there are several teams that have two full lines of AHL, legitimate AHL players. And if the lockout does not end – this season, if the whole season is lost in the NHL, that means the teams that are loaded with higher-level talent are going to stay loaded with higher-level talent, and that's going to make it harder on the other teams that maybe don't have quite as much, or, you know, the Icemen have their fair share of guys, but some of them are hurt, and some of them are rookies, and it's not like we've got proven AHL-level guys that are just sitting here lighting the scoreboard on fire, while some of the other teams do, and if the NHL doesn't get its act in gear and save the season, then the teams that have that decided advantage right now are going to have it the rest of the season right through the playoffs, and it's going to make this season even more unique than it was to begin with.
Yep.
And I also think it means that going forward into next season, it means you can't draw very many conclusions about the following season based on what happens this season, because it's going to be a totally different ballgame once the NHL settles its differences and players are kind of back to their rightful spot.
I agree 100%, but yeah, the Aces look like they'll be the team to beat when the championship comes around. Well, we got the game tonight, Cincinnati away once again, and then Friday night, our final game of the road trip puts us in, it's in Cincinnati again as well, and then we come home, and Kalamazoo's here Saturday, and Toledo's here on Sunday. We already got the guarantee. I'm going on record that we will beat Toledo by using the shocker stat that we've won 4 Saturday nights in a row.
The only problem with that is we play Toledo on Sunday.
No, Kalamazoo. I'm sorry, we're beating Kalamazoo, and then Toledo's on Sunday. But
this is learning to read schedules 101 with
gosh.
DB.
Yeah, I just... maybe we need some different colors on there, red and green or something. But how difficult is it? We got a 5-game road trip, and then we've got to drive. We don't even get a day off. We've got to play Friday night in Cincy. Granted, that's not too far, 4 hours or whatever by bus, but then we're right back in our own barn with a team waiting, and then another game on Sunday. So, the 5-game road trip's over, but it's 4-5 for this part.
4-5, 3-3 again. And on top of that, you're already dealing with all the injuries and new guys and stuff. It's not like there's been an abundance of practice time available lately for Crum to sort of bring the new guys in and get them up to speed with everyone else. So it's 4-5 and 3-3 is challenging to begin with, but then when you factor in all the other extenuating circumstances, it makes it even more difficult. But if nothing else, it'll be good to be back home. I'm sure the guys will be happy to sleep in their own beds and not be traveling on the bus all day Saturday and Sunday again, but it's going to be tough. Cincinnati Wednesday and Friday, they're 10-4-2. They're second in the division. This actually starts 9 straight divisional games.
Oh,
so
interesting.
It's time to make hay. If you want to gain some ground in the standings, this is a good time to do it. But easier said than done with all the injuries. And then Saturday against Kalamazoo, they started hot, but they've cooled off. They've dropped to .500. They're 9-9. They're third in the division. They're only 4-8 in their last 12. So that might be a team that is ripe for the picking, so to speak. Not that the Iceman are in a better situation with all the injuries, but Saturday is Packed House night, Star Wars night. There's a post-game jersey auction. And I talked last week about I wasn't sure if it would end up being packed. I'm still not 100% sure that it's going to sell out, but I think it will be a very good crowd. I looked at the Ticketmaster availability on Monday night, and the lower bowl looked like there was probably only about 300 or 400 tickets left. The entire upper bowl is now open, and it was about half taken. But some of those, there were some large blocks that were blocked off, so that some of those might be blocked off for groups or something like that. So I don't know if all those have actually been sold, but I would imagine we'll see at least 7,500.
8,000 in there last
over,
year.
Over 9,400.
Oh, was
that was
it?
The first sellout.
Okay.
I don't know that we're going to get to 9,400 again, but I think we'll certainly probably top 7,500, maybe get up over 8, depending on walk-up sales. So that should be good. It's always fun when there's that big of a crowd. You just hope the team shows up and plays well.
And no one gets injured.
Yeah, yeah, no more injuries. And then Sunday, Toledo, they're 11-7-1. They're now leading the division. This whole division, other than the Icemen staying at the bottom of it, has been kind of topsy-turvy. The other four teams have been jostling for position a lot. And Toledo's on top now. Sunday's game is it's the first time we'll see the Walleye here. We played them on the road, but this will be the first time they've come here. So it'll be interesting to see them in person. Also, Sunday is the appearance by Bird Zerk.
Bird Zerk.
Bird Zerk.
You got to help me out with this one. I have no idea what that is.
It's a mascot.
Oh, okay.
It's a kind of a takeoff on the Philly Fanatic and the famous San Diego Chicken, which I would love to see if we could get the famous chicken in.
Yeah,
that's the best mascot in history. But Bird Zerk is coming. The Philly Fanatic is coming to a game later this season,
cool.
too. But Bird Zerk is the only thing currently on the promotional schedule for Sunday. Originally, the pocket schedule said that Sunday would also have a bobblehead giveaway, but they quietly took that off of the AvansvilleIceman.com promo schedule. The only thing that's listed is now Bird Zerk, but they never made any sort of announcement saying, hey, we're not doing bobbleheads. So I'd imagine there will be a few people that will show up Sunday having seen their pocket schedules expecting to get a free bobblehead, and there won't be one.
Maybe with all the injuries, we should have dangling shoulder head or dangling shoulder blown out Todd Robinson knee, get a Todd Robinson bobblehead, but yeah, his left leg flops around.
Yeah, I think if anyone this season is worthy of having a bobblehead, it's Brian Patafi. He's been the busiest guy on the roster.
The guy can't even sit still. His head's all twisting when we're doing an interview because he's just waiting for someone else to get injured.
Yeah, waiting for
a Brian Patafi bobblehead. I love it.
I think we should see if we can make that happen.
We can
slap the WYR calls on the bottom of it. Maybe get him
fantastic.
To autograph a few of them.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that. All right. Any final thoughts here?
Well, just still a lot of season left. I know everybody's down with all the injuries and the team losing games, but you still got to look at it. We're only 19 games in the season. There's still 53 games left, and despite all the injuries and all the losses, we're still only 5 points out of the eighth playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that I necessarily expect the team to get healthy and come back and make the playoffs, but
like you did on the first show.
Yeah, well, it was early. That was before we had a mass unit in the locker room. But it could still happen. There's still a lot of games left. And you look at people are so down, but in the NHL, if you get to the point where there's a month left in the season and you're 5 points out of a playoff spot, you don't write your team off. So when
a Leaf fan does.
Well, you're more than 5 points out by a month left in the season, though.
That's true, too.
So it's not like 5 points is this insurmountable gap. Now, some of the teams in front of us have a few games in hand, too, so that hurts a little bit. But it's still there's a long way to go. We're only about a third of the way through. In fact, we're not even a third of the way through. So there's still plenty of time. If this team can get healthy, I think we've seen in the flashes of brilliance that they have the talent to win games. It's just health at this point is the biggest question. And then with health will come improved chemistry. But in the meantime, they just got to try to keep their heads above water and stay within shouting distance of the playoffs and hopefully get some guys back in a month or two and get back to some semblance of a regular roster of the guys we expected that we would have down the stretch. But the health of the Iceman is going to be one big thing, and then also whether or not the NHL lockout comes to an end or continues. We've said that a few times on this show already, that it's going to be a huge X factor as to whether or not other teams are going to get to keep all their upper-level guys that are down right now because of the lockout. And right now it doesn't look good for the lockout ending, which means it doesn't look good for the Iceman getting a little relief in the form of other teams losing players.
I think win or lose, the perspective you got to keep is the NHL is locked out, and there are people that love hockey that can't get any of it. And even if the Iceman lose, because they're an expansion franchise in an awesome league, this ECHL has been awesome. It's been a lot of fun. And no matter where you live in town, you're 20 minutes away from a hockey game, from a pro hockey game at this level.
Yeah.
And that really has to be the focus, not, you know, making the playoffs or winning the championship or firing Crom. Let's just be happy that we've got a franchise at this level and affordable tickets and a beautiful arena, and it's right down the street from us. And next year we'll see, you know, what kind of transactions we make. But, I talked to family back in Detroit and everything else. They don't have anything to do.
Yeah. Well, on that note, the Arch City Army, one of the fan clubs for the Columbus Blue Jackets, they're going to Cincinnati tonight for a Wednesday ECHL game. They're watching the Icemen play the Cyclones. They're that starved for hockey that they're driving to Cincinnati from Columbus on a Wednesday night so that they can see their AA affiliate play hockey. And that's proof of what NHL fans in the NHL cities right now are going through. So while we'd love to have a team that's winning games and challenging for the cup, we just need to be thankful that we still have a team. We have a team that's playing hockey right now, and it's good hockey. Well, it's a good hockey league.
Yeah.
it's mediocre to good hockey, depending on who's healthy on any given night. But it's still, you just have to keep things in perspective. If you told me 10 years ago that we would have AA hockey in Evansville, I would have said you were crazy. I mean, when I came, I moved to Evansville in 1999 to go to college, which there people know how old or young I am, depending on your perspective. When I came here, we still had the old Swander, which fallen apart.
The
it was
barn.
In terrible shape. And the arena was Roberts Stadium, which there was no way you would ever have hockey there. So when I moved here, I thought, well, I'm not going to see pro hockey in my town anytime soon. And it wasn't anytime soon, but it did eventually come, and the Icemen played at the new Swander, and now they're at Ford Center. And it's amazing how far Evansville has come as a hockey market, and we should just be glad that while the NHL fans are sitting at home going, we may not see hockey in our barn until next September, we can still say, well, we got a game on Saturday.
Yep, Saturday and Sunday. He is the Michael Shockley, and you're listening to Icemen Insights here on 96.9 The Wire. Michael Shockley from IcemenManiacs.com, senior writer, webmaster, and the only hockey coverage that you can rely on a daily basis here in the Tri-State. Thank you again for listening to Icemen Insights.
So long.
You just got shot with an arrow.
I did. Another arrow. Oh, I'm under attack.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.